thank you for coming today. We're a very small committee for the record. Would everyone like to mention their name and why you're here? Representative Richardson?
I'm State Representative Dennis Richardson, District 4, Southern Oregon, and I'm here because I care.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I represent House District 11, Central Lane in Linn County. I am here because the Speaker appointed me to this committee.
And I'm Representative Sarah Gelser, and I'm here because we adopted some rules, and it would seem that some of them need some clarification. And it's my hope that we can finish our work expeditiously, both this evening and in terms of the number of meetings that it requires for us to come up with the clarifications that our colleagues and our friends in the community, those that have business before the legislature, need so that they can continue with their business and communication with one another. It was very interesting because last night most of us got in our mail the CSG West mailing about ethics, and one of the lines that was very interesting to me was that following rules and following laws doesn't make us ethical. It's the choices that we each individually choose to make every day. And I think that that's something important to go along with these guidelines, that everyone is going to have ways that they look at these things, and I hope that we can move forward in a spirit where we're trying to comply with the spirit of openness and transparency to the public, which is the spirit that these rules were entered into with. And with that, we have some invited testimony today. So we're going to gavel into the informational meeting, and we're going to have a general overview of the gift policy, and Ramona Foley. Kennedy.
Unless you want to talk about children.
No, but
might be one and the same.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ramona Kennedy. I'm the Chief Clerk of the House. And as you know, and for those that don't, is that the Speaker has sort of designated me as the individual to sort of help clarify and provide advice to the public, to those interested in the legislative process, and to obviously the members as it pertains to the new gift guidelines that have been adopted in House rules. Since we adopted these rules, or you adopted these rules last Monday, I've had many questions and invitations to review. And in addition to some requests for travel out of state. Madam Chair, members, I'm providing you with the document that is a memo from my office that sort of outlines some of the questions that I have received. In the first section, I'm just providing the basic overview that I'm hoping will assist both the members and the lobby in working through the questions, and I believe that this really is sort of the overlying principles by which we will be dealing with these rules. And I will leave you, as opposed to me reading those into the record, to just review those. In addition, in Section 2, probably the where I need the most assistance from you in your charge to help provide clarification, is that there are several areas by which I believe that the language in the rules and in the guidelines that are encompassed in our House procedures and personnel manual that make it difficult sometimes for me to advise either lobby or members if something is appropriate. And I would suggest to you at this time that those are the items of, and the Speaker also has noted these, as what is a snack. I think that's different to different individuals. What is open to the public? And I can give you an example of that in that I initially believed that open to the public, and we're talking specifically now as it pertains under the rules of meals, that if the public was invited, that a member could also attend. I, however, believed at the time initially that the members would need to pay at the same rate for that meal as any other invited public members, and I believe that really wasn't the initial intent, that those tickets could be comped. And I'm now reviewing those rules appropriately. In addition, serving on a panel and making remarks. I would add a list to that. I'd ask one more that I really need help on clarifying, and I think goes to the heart of the entire rule, and that would be the definition of individuals, businesses, or organizations that have business before the legislature. I believe clearly that that is one that we need to spend some time on, because as an advocate for participation in this legislative process, and wanting to be very transparent and open and deliberative and provide a forum for the public to share their ideas, I'm not sure exactly then how to define what is a business before the legislature. So I would look for some guidance there. Again, I would suggest that I've gone through this memo, and I've then laid out some questions that have been shared with me and how I believe that they should be responded to. And again, I would suggest that maybe the committee would like to look at those, maybe have a conversation about those, guide me as to whether or not they are appropriate in my answers. But they do lay out some interesting clarifications in various events, dinners, or meals that happen. The last thing I'd like to let the committee know is that what I have done is that there is an additional document that I provided to you and is available to anybody else that would like it. If, in fact, a member would like to travel out of state, and there's guidelines whether or not those the travel and lodging to those events qualify, is that I with the assistance of the Speaker's Office, have put together a conference scholarship application form, which can be found in my office. So we ask about five questions that are appropriate as to whether or not they qualify as a meeting that might be gifted. And then I will be signing either to approve or deny those and returning that to the members so that they would have the clarification they need to go ahead and proceed and notify whoever is going to be giving them that grant. As you know, Madam Chair, there was no reference to in-state travel and lodging, and so there's been a little bit of confusion about that. And the other thing I might note is that I am not clear, although meals are clearly stated that they should not be provided with someone with an interest in front of the legislature or business in front of the legislature. In some of the conferences that the members are attending and or staff will be attending, there may be opportunities within those conferences for meals. And right now we only deal with the lodging and the travel, but not with any entertainment that might be provided there and or any meals. And so I think that we need to look further into that clarifying language to make sure that we stay within the intent of the guidelines. And with that, one more thing. If anybody's ever interested in my office, I've set up a notebook. It's in the front office. And any time that somebody is asking for me to look at an invitation, Madam Chair, I am getting a copy of that invitation. I'm reviewing it. Then I'm approving it so that if members do want to know whether a particular invitation they might have received is it's appropriate for them to attend, and or if a lobbyist would like that clarification up front, I'm trying to provide that assistance at this time using the best judgment I can in making sure the intent of the rule is complied with. That is my report to the committee, and I look forward to working with you and the members in helping clarify these guidelines and staying within the intent of the initial adoption of these rules.
Thank you, Ramona. Are there questions? Ramona, can I review? Great, thank you.
Thank you.
The next individual for invited testimony is Bruce Bishop, president of the Capital Club.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Capital Club, where I serve as its president this year. As all of you probably know, the Capital Club is the publisher of this directory of our members. This is one of the publications, I think, that can be very helpful in the legislative process to know about lobbyists. One of the things you may not have noticed, however, unless you read this far more carefully than I would expect you to, is that the first chapter really in our directory is a set of our bylaws, the bylaws of the Capital Club, which includes in Article 1 standards of conduct to which members of the Capital Club agree to abide. Those standards include our agreement that we will conform to the rules of the House and the Senate, which is why it's important for Capital Club members to know what the rules of the House and Senate are so that they can conform their activities to those rules. And that's really the reason that we're interested in, you know, participating in this dialogue with the committee so that it can be as clear as possible to lobbyists and others about what is permitted under the House rules and what is not permitted. I think the chief clerk has outlined well for you some of the interpretational issues that the committee may want to address that are contained in the rules, where there may be ambiguities or uncertainty really about what the effect of the rule may be on certain kinds of conduct. With regard to the specific question or introduction that the chair made about the CSG West guidelines, which I haven't read or referred to, I think it is important that there be guidelines that can be followed and standards that can be adhered to. The way the Capital Club has addressed that issue is with a very broad statement of what is acceptable conduct by a lobbyist in this building. And what we have said is Capital Club members are committed to carrying out their professional responsibilities honestly. No member shall knowingly or willfully make any false statement or misrepresentation to any legislative or executive official, and the standard goes on. We wrestled with how specific to make our guidelines, and basically we ended up with an honesty standard. We're not describing specifically what honesty is. We're expecting members to adhere to that standard of conduct. But I think as you start to detail more specifically what is permissible and impermissible and draw lines, that's when you get into the difficulty of interpretation and the challenge increases. So by and large, if you read our standards, they're very general. Treat members honestly. Don't interfere in a conversation if somebody else is engaged in a conversation. You know, basic rules of the road. But we haven't tried to be overly prescriptive in defining terms or describing what is acceptable conduct. So I think that's at least the way the Capital Club has addressed the issues that you're grappling with as well in the rules. I'd be pleased to answer any questions or try to provide any clarification that I could for the committee.
Any questions for Mr. Bishop? Right, thank you.
Well, I think it would be important for us this evening. Ramona has prepared this memo for us with some proposed clarifications to some of the guidelines. I think because there are people that are waiting for some guidance on that clarification, it might make sense to go through the document. Mm-hmm. So I believe that starts on page 2. So the first question, maybe we can go through these and then go back and see if they trigger any other areas of clarification that we might want to add to our list to work on. But the first question that had been submitted for clarification was, may House members accept the governor's invitation to have a catered buffet dinner at Mahonia Hall? And the answer was that the first issue is whether the governor has an interest before the legislature. If he didn't, the rules wouldn't apply. However, it is the opinion of the chief clerk that the governor does have such an interest and that the gift rules do apply. And because a catered buffet dinner is a restaurant meal, it would not be permitted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Richardson.
I don't know how deep we want to go into this, but we do have to deal with the wording where it says private public restaurant. And so the determination is then that if it's catered, it qualifies as restaurant.
Representative Richardson, Ramona, do you want to come back?
I don't know how much you want to go into this at this point. You know, we're now, if we're reading the question and the proposed answer, are we then going to evaluate each of these proposed answers at this time?
I think it would be my preference that we're not going to evaluate them deeply, but knowing that Ramona has identified snacks open to the public, serving on a panel, making remarks, and business before the legislature as issues that need clarification, I want to make sure that if there are other issues that we need to clarify that come up through these questions, that we can get those added to the list so that we can address them. And if some of these are slam dunks, that there's general agreement that the interpretation is what's intended, I think that would be helpful to the order of business around here so that people can have some confidence in the answers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in my clarification of that particular question, and if I understand what Representative Richardson was trying to get at, under your guidelines that were published and accompanied the rules of the House, it was stated that members could not accept or their employees could not accept private meals at a restaurant or catered by a restaurant, assuming that caterers typically, and I use some latitude here, may come through a restaurant or they have a business of catering business. I think that was the intent, that if it wasn't a home-cooked meal, then it would not be allowed. And so assuming that the governor was not cooking the meal, that it would probably be catered and therefore would not be whoever attended could accept the invitation of the governor but could not consume the food and or the beverages unless there was some assurances that, you know, your consumption would be or the cost of the whole affair was under $10.
Okay, so just for clarification, when it says private meals at a restaurant or catered by a restaurant, basically, we're understanding that to mean private meals at a restaurant or professionally catered.
Representative.
New caterers are not really through a restaurant, but.
Madam Chair, Representative Richardson, I believe that was the intent. I think a lot of restaurants provide catering services, but I also think that there are some that stand alone because of the word catered. I think that the intent was getting at that profession.
I have a threshold question, which I think relates to the whole business of what this committee should be doing. And if I may, I think I'd like to back up and deal with that, if that's okay.
Yes.
I'm looking at Rule 19.60. The Speaker shall appoint a guidelines committee that will provide guidance to members regarding these rules. That's clear enough. The committee will work with the Speaker and Chief Clerk to issue revised editions of the gift guidelines as needed. Now, it appears to me, as I read that second sentence of that rule, that the guidelines, in effect, are under the jurisdiction of this committee and the Speaker and the Clerk. It is our job to work with the Speaker and the Clerk to issue revised editions of the gift guidelines. What I think that means, and I'd like a discussion about this, what I think that means is that the guidelines are not, strictly speaking, a part of the rules. They're an addendum to the rules which this committee has jurisdiction over and can therefore amend after working with the Speaker and the Chief Clerk. That's my understanding on it. Now, if the clerk or other members of the committee disagree with that interpretation, I think we ought to discuss that. And the reason I raise the rule is that I believe that the clerk's interpretation of the guidelines in this particular instance is correct. And I also further believe that it's something that was never discussed in the preparation of the guidelines, And it is specifically the kind of situation that led the House to adopt rules that did not include the guidelines under their normal amendment requirement, because the guidelines are not, strictly speaking, part of the rules. In other words, what I guess I'm saying is if this is a correct interpretation of the rule, of the guidelines made by the clerk, and I believe it is, then the question, I think, or the threshold question is, do these guidelines come under the jurisdiction of this committee? Can we amend them without going back to, without taking them back to the floor as a rules amendment, as I believe we can under Rule 19.60? And if that's the case, should one of our topics of conversation be an amendment to the guidelines to deal with the issue that has been raised here? Precisely because I believe, at least, that the application of this guideline to this situation doesn't make a whole lot of sense, even though I agree with the clerk that this is a correct interpretation of the guidelines as applied to the circumstance. I'm sorry that's so convoluted, but that's really the question I want to raise.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Ramona, do you have a response to that? As our parliamentarian, do we have the authority to change the guidelines themselves? Permission to simply clarify
Madam
them?
Chair, Representative Barnhart, I appreciate the review and the interpretation of House Rule 19.60. However, if you look at 19.55, which talks about the definitions, and maybe gifts was not, again, a word, but it says are items value more than $10, entertainment, out-of-state travel, lodging, and meals, and that more detailed definitions of these categories that are outlined in the gift guidelines were adopted on January 8th and have the same weight as a rule. And so then you get into 19.60 that provides the charge of the committee, which is to work with the Speaker and the Chief Clerk to issue revised additions. I think I would interpret that to say that as long as the initial intent of the rule is not changed, mm-hmm. that further clarifications would be appropriate without going back to the membership for approval. However, if at some point in time you want to potentially change, maybe I use this as an example, the threshold of $10 as a gift, and or if you want to change sort of what was adopted about, the parameters that are necessary to authorize out-of-state travel on a scholarship, I'm not sure that that's within the latitude of this committee. I think the latitude of this committee is only to further clarify potentially language, i.e., the definition of who is doing business, what does it mean by a snack, what does it mean to make remarks, further clarification.
Madam Chair, just to simplify, I agree with that interpretation. I think anything that would do violence to the rules is not within the purview of the committee except as a proposed amendment to the rules. But things that simply clarify what the rule means fall within the guidelines. And I think that's what you're suggesting, Madam Clerk.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, very cautiously that is what I am suggesting.
All right.
Again, I think that we have the committee, the clerk, and the speaker have to be very, very careful as they proceed to try to provide further clarification that at some point in time it may warrant a readoption, not necessarily of a change in the House rules, but clearly a acceptance of the new guidelines that are in-housed in the House Procedures and Personnel Manual.
Ramona, to clarify, would that mean the difference between making a substantive change in the rule might be this committee wouldn't be authorized without an amendment to say that the gift limit was dropping to zero or raising to 25, but we could perhaps adopt guidelines that went to that first issue that would say that the rules are not intended to apply to conversations between elected officials so that Representative Richardson could come to my home for dinner, whether I catered that dinner or not.
Madam Chair, committee members, and I'm going to be real technical here, and so please forgive me. First of all, I want to clarify that, Madam Chair, you and Representative Richardson could do that, could buy each other a meal, and you don't fall underneath these guidelines because you are the business. So this doesn't apply member to member or staff to members or senators to representatives. However, outside of the branch of the legislature, then it does apply. And I would suggest that the minute or when you proceed to suggest that, and again, clarification here may be needed, but if you would look under items of value, it states that that employees, members, the clerk's office may accept gifts from family members. We don't define what a family member is. Okay, so we sort of understand what the general definition of that might be. Some states see that as immediate family. Other states see that down, and they've actually even referenced in their guidelines to the fourth, you know, tier for, you know, third and fourth cousins. And so, again, I think that that all falls within your jurisdiction without returning to the members of the House. However, if you start suggesting others that might be you might be able to accept a gift from, then I think that that would probably require you to go back to the membership for adoption. Does that help?
That does. That does help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I would, Madam Chair, just say that I haven't had a chance to see the proposed questions or the proposed answers. And if you want to go through each one of them, then it means that we'll each be kind of analyzing it on the spot and trying to respond on the spot. And it might be a good idea to take this and other questions that have come to us and then review them and then come back with a kind of a recommendation as to whether this is good, this is good, this one we ought to consider making changes. And then also with a decision as to whether or not the goal will be to take another pass at these guidelines, because there's a number of questions initially, because this is a new rule and it's new for the House, and then maybe make an amendment to the guideline book that contains multiple changes to deal with the various questions that have come up, with the understanding that it's the first time and, you know, and that won't continue to happen regularly, but initially there's going to be some adjustments.
I think that's a great suggestion, because I immediately see that we're getting, with my question and anything else that comes after that, we're getting deeply into the morass if we try to do it right here. A question sort of in aid of that is, one is, we have set up a semi-regular meeting schedule, haven't we?
We have not yet set up a semi-regular meeting. Going to propose Monday evenings at 5 o'clock.
I see.
And I checked with each of you individually, and it sounded like that would be okay.
That's fine. That would be fine with me.
And if everyone has other committees that run from 3 to 5, maybe we could make them 5:15, if that works better.
The Health Policy Access Committee is meeting presently with the Senate Committee on Access, dealing with the issue of health, you know, changes in the Oregon health system. And it's my understanding that Senator Bates and Westland are asking that those joint meetings not just be on Wednesday, but also Monday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that has been approved yet by the Senate. And so I just mentioned that it could be an issue about being in two places at one time.
What if we were to adjourn this evening with the understanding that we're all going to go and read these, get back to me the questions that you want to have onto the agenda? I'll work with Rick, and we will find that space that fits with the three of us to meet.
I know one of the questions that I'd like to ask now.
Okay.
And I direct it to the clerk, and that is, do other states have, and this is not to answer today, this is for research, do other states have a gift rule that applies to individuals, businesses, or organizations that have business before the legislature, And if so, do other states have definitions of what that term business before the legislature means? Because the one thing that's very clear as we look at this is that we don't have a definition. And I'd like to know what the range of possibilities are before we get into a conversation of our own about what those words mean.
Representative Barnhart, I think that makes sense. My one concern is about the speed with which we do this work, because I know that there are people that are waiting as we speak to figure out how to proceed with their business. So if you could bring that information back to our next meeting, which we hopefully will have early next week, can we meet the posting requirements to do that if we're able to find a slot?
48 hours.
We have a 48-hour posting requirement. If we met on Monday, we'd have to post by tomorrow.
Okay.
If we meet on Tuesday, we'd have to post by Friday.
Okay. Are there other questions that we want to be sure to get forwarded for research before that time? Ramona?
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, in response to Representative Barnhart's answer or question, yeah, other states have done that, and I've actually got the document, so it'll be easy for us to provide that information to you. They've just done it a little differently. However, Madam Chair, I would ask on behalf of, and I don't want to speak for the Capital Club, but they are seeking clarification, and they have been working very diligently with me in trying to provide some guidance to their membership as to what is appropriate and not appropriate, and the members of the lobby have been very diligent in coming to me and asking me for approval on individual invitations. But I do think that we need to give them as quickly as possible that guidance, and they have been very patient and not sending out anything publicly to try to set up those guidelines, but allowing us to have this opportunity to sort of clarify that. And most of these questions come from that, mm-hmm. from that group. So as we look at another meeting, and I would suggest that I think it would be appropriate that on the surface, even though we may find concerns about where we're finding, further definitions need to be added for clarification. On the surface, I think that, and these are how I'm interpreting the rules, that it might warrant just a quick review to see if there's any glaring errors in my interpretations today, so that we can provide that guidance now and then be able to dive into these questions for the unintended consequences or other problems that might surface because of these clarifications. Is that possible?
I think that that's possible to do that quickly. However, according to the rule, and I think that this is a very important thing to be clear, you are the arbiter of what is appropriate. And until there are changes to the guidelines, you are interpreting them. So I believe that people should trust what it is that you're saying to them, with that recognition that as this committee does its work, there may be some adjustments to the guidelines. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I have read them in the last few minutes. And there's only one thing that I disagree with and as an interpretation of the existing guidelines, recognizing that we don't have a definition of what business before the legislature is. And that is the issue of incidental entertainment.
Yes.
I disagree with the interpretation that I'm not sure exactly which page it's on. It's on the bottom of page 3. May a trade association invite all members of the House or representatives to a banquet at the Salem Convention Center. May the banquet include musical entertainment. Then there's a response. The response, I think, suggests that if the entertainment is professional, that somehow or another the legislators would have to pay for that. I believe that's the wrong interpretation, because the guidelines specifically say let's see if I can find it here, under entertainment, members will not accept tickets or fees. Those are the two operative words. under the guidelines, in the middle of the first page under gift guidelines. And in this situation, what the member has accepted is a meal, which comes under an exception to the meal rule because all 60 members are invited. So my analysis of the issue would be different, and it would go like this. The meal can be accepted because all 60 members of the legislature are invited. So the meal can be paid for by the trade association. Any entertainment which is offered incidental to the event is incidental, and therefore comes under the incidental entertainment rule. There are no tickets being offered, and there is no fees being charged, and it isn't the kind of situation in which either tickets or fees would normally apply. And therefore, it doesn't matter whether the entertainment is professionally paid for or whether the entertainment is high school drumming corps, as you suggest in the response. But in fact, under the guidelines, as I see them at least, you could hire the greatest jazz musician in the world to come and play trumpet in the background behind the hubbub at the meal, and as long as it was incidental to the event, that it would be allowed under the guidelines. That's the only difference of opinion that I have, at least, with the proposed interpretation that the clerk has prepared. Everything else that I've read appears to me to conform with the guidelines.
Mr. Richardson?
I'm sure I agree with Representative Barnhart's position on that. I think that the idea of incidental means you don't have the event at a concert.
Correct. That's
because
my view.
Now the concert is the focal point, and your meeting is incidental to going to the concert. But if it's a convention or a meeting that has an agenda and it's set up and the entertainment is incidental, then it shouldn't matter what kind of entertainment it is.
And to the extent that comment is useful to the clerk, we offer it.
And Madam Chair, members, I appreciate that, and it went actually beyond probably what was being asked, because in the question it didn't really state whether or not it was just a musical performance at the trade association. And I appreciate both of your inputs, Representative Barnhart and Representative Richardson, and I think you are probably correct in that it's tickets or fees. I think that they're also, however, in using the word incidental in the guidelines that we've produced, you may accept incidental entertainment, which would suggest less than a professional level of entertainment. And so I think that was sort of a hard line to draw. And probably another question, Madam Chair, that needs to be added is, and I had sort of put it on the list earlier, what is really meant by incidental entertainment? And I think in the examples that were used, it sort of said you can't accept, as Representative Barnhart has outlined, tickets or fees where it is the main purpose of the event. But then when you give examples of incidental entertainment, it's less than a professional performance. Not that our high school choirs can't give a very professional performance. I don't want to make that statement so straightforward. But again, I struggled with whether or not it is or not, so I appreciate the input. And I clearly can delete that sentence now for a small time until we can add further clarification.
Could I just add to
yes,
that?
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I think the example is not really part of the guideline. It's simply an example. I believe that the word incidental is exactly what Representative Richardson was saying a minute ago, that it's not the primary focus of the event. It would be no different if the Rotary Club in the example, or the Chamber of Commerce meeting in the example here, happened to have professional members of a cast of a theater performance as a piece of the program for the event, and the fact that they were professional people wouldn't make any difference. It's simply incidental to the Chamber of Commerce meeting, and of course the the interest of the group in that situation that presumably is to sell tickets to the actual event, which is no longer incidental at that point. So I respectfully disagree with the interpretation that is concerned about whether the entertainment is professionally paid for or whether it's a high school group. I think that's simply clumsiness with the example rather than to be intended as a part of the guideline.
So we'll add that to the list, and you're comfortable deleting that part from your response.
Yes.
To distribute back to the Capitol Club.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. What I will do is just delete that last sentence, and I do believe that we need to add to the list of definitions that need to be clarified as incidental entertainment.
Representative Richardson, as you've had the opportunity to skim, is there anything that jumps out at you that needs to be addressed this evening?
No, I have not finished reading them. I'm now on page 3 of 5, the question relating to breakfast. I see the answer as being harmonious with the intent and the writings of the rules. I was just now reading about the Marion County delegation of the House attending a reception in Salem to discuss business development. Looks like it's correct to me. And we've talked about the next one. That puts us in the middle of page 4. Madam Chair, I think that another definition we need to have is, it's kind of what's already been mentioned, that is, what does it mean to have matters before the legislature? I mean, if homeschoolers come with pies because they're homeschooling and there's some matter that might mention homeschooling, does that mean that they have a matter before the legislature, or does it have to relate to a specific bill that is being promoted or opposed? I don't know what the definition is on that.
I think that's an important clarification.
It's all part of that business question, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
I see no problem with that. Okay. Madam Chair, I think that it's good that we have an agreement, and that is that members of the legislature are not considered to have an interest before the legislature because we are the legislature, because that circumvents a whole series of potential questions.
It does.
And that's good, because if I had you to dinner, you would want me to cater it instead of cook.
Madam Chair, while Representative Richardson, if I might, is continuing to review this, one question I didn't include in here, and it was really because I didn't know how to respond to it, was that one of the questions that was posed to me was that if a member or all 60 members were invited to listen to potentially a lecture on a particular subject matter, maybe the history of Oregon, would that be viewed as entertainment, or would that be viewed as educational? And I think that, you know, again, we need to look at some definitions on where we can draw that line. For someone who loves history, they might find it entertainment. For others, they may find it just strictly educational. So I think that it's difficult when we have some of these opportunities presented to the legislature in items that really maybe enhances their ability to do their jobs, that some of these lectures may be viewed or opportunities may be viewed by one individual as educational and another by another individual as strictly entertainment.
I think it's a good thing that many of us find our work to be enjoyable, and I don't think that it was the intent of the rules to shut legislators off from the receiving of information and from the development of good policy. So I hope that when we're going through, that we're careful before we add more things into the guidelines, because even if we're simply trying to clarify, simply by adding them, it could actually become more restrictive and have unintended consequences that we don't wish to see happen.
Yeah, I agree, Madam Chair. And may I say that I think the distinction between entertainment and the other word, language.
Education.
Really has to do with a rough and ready understanding that in one instance we're arguably talking about things that are our business to do, and in the other we're talking about diversions from the business that we're to do. And if we think about that kind of rough distinction, then I think the meaning of the words becomes clearer. A hockey match is entertainment. A history lesson on the history of Oregon potentially could be either, but is it a diversion or is it simply a way of improving our capacity to do our business? And if it's the latter, then I think it's educational.
It could also depend upon your committee assignment as well, if all 60 members are invited.
Well,
if you're actively engaged in the work of a topic, whether or not you attend, if we tried to nail that down, could start to depend upon your actual workload.
Well, and of course, if I could say, I think that we're busy enough that the legislators who find that the topic is of educational value to them are the ones who will attend. And the other legislators who have, after all, other business to attend to might not attend. But if all are invited, then it meets the requirement of the rule.
Correct.
Madam Chair, I have no problem with any of the question answers down to the last one. And the last one is kind of a continuation of the prior discussion we had relating to incidental.
Right.
And, I mean, I think we have to deal with the wording, but the intent that we're looking at, I think that what Chief Clerk is referring to is that if it is essentially a performance that could be part of a convention, and if that kind of performance is something you normally would pay money for, or that the whoever sponsoring the event has paid substantial money, then you end up with essentially a kind of a performance that's under the guise of a convention or an event or a meeting that normally would be otherwise would be fully acceptable. These are, you know, there is kind of a challenge there at that point. For instance, Representative Barnhart said, you know, maybe the finest, you know, you say a violinist in the world. Well, if the event is we're going to have this meeting and we're going to discuss how counties function, and by the way, the finest violinist in the world is going to be who will be giving incidental entertainment to this event. Well, now you've got a problem. And if that person you'd normally pay a substantial amount of money for a ticket, then would it apply here or not? You know, maybe that's the kind of thing that has to be looked at on a case-by-case basis, because for the most part, it would be very clear. If it's the high school marching band, it's not a problem. If it's a very famous performer, then maybe it needs to be looked at, but that's a pretty extreme possibility.
If I could, I just look at the plain language of the guidelines, and the plain language of the guidelines say tickets or fees. And I think the intent of the guideline was that if you are taken to an entertainment where that requires a ticket to get in, or if fees are paid on your behalf so you can attend a sporting event, which is the way it's worded here, then definitely those come under the gift rules, and you have to pay for your own ticket or your own fees. But it doesn't say anything except about incidental. I mean, incidental is the clarification of the guideline is that if it's incidental to something else, and therefore doesn't involve a ticket or a fee, then it doesn't covered is not covered by the rule. And I that would be my preference for how we interpret this. Now, I would be astounded, frankly, if any lobbyists would go out and hire the most famous violinist in the world as an incidental entertainment for a meal. If they did, we could talk about rewriting the guidelines, but more likely what's going to happen is that if they do have entertainment incidental to an event that includes a meal that all 60 members are invited to and therefore come under the 60 member rule, it may very well be a professional group, but everyone, including the legislators who are there, will consider it to be incidental. And maybe part of the evidence for that might very well be that it's not really advertised in advance that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's advertised as a meal sponsored by a group that's inviting all 60 members. The fact that there happens to be a group of country singers there providing entertainment during the meal then becomes incidental, even if they're paid.
So we will add incidental to the list so that we can discuss that further. I think that as we close this evening, first of all, if others have things that they need to have added to the list, whether it's members of the Capitol Club, other members in the building, or members of the public that might be listening online, get those questions to me or to Ramona so that we can be considering those. We'll make sure you get the written materials in advance to expedite our conversation when we meet again next week. But I also wanted to thank Ramona for the time that I know that you and your staff have put into trying to interpret these new guidelines over the course of the last week and a half, and also the members of the Capitol Club who have really made a diligent effort to comply with something that's new, and also to members. I know this is a new thing that we're trying, and I think the intent is to strengthen our relationship with the community, to help the community understand that we come here to get to work and to do business. And I think that there are always, we'll finish our work here, there will continue to be gray parts in the guidelines and in the rules, and it's up to each of us to operate within the spirit of these guidelines, which is that we want a transparent way that we do business. And I know from the colleagues that I work with, all of you are people of very high integrity, and I know that our friends in the lobby and others with business before the legislature are as well. So I have great confidence that we'll be able to make this work.
Thank you. May I make one additional comment?
Yes, sir, Representative Barnhart.
To some extent, this discussion feels very unusual to me. And it occurs to me, as you were describing our work, that there are really a couple of different things that I think I experience as we are talking. The first one is that, indeed, it is our job to follow the spirit in which these rules were adopted, to try to come up with policy that puts them into effect in an honest way. I think the other thing that we have to do, especially given the interpretation of the guidelines, is to make certain that we actually follow what's said in our material. And I find myself going back and forth between those two things, and I think we have to do both. If we get to a place in which we think that the honest and appropriate thing to do to get to the issue we're trying to get to, the overall overarching issue, is no longer served by a reasonable interpretation of the guidelines, then it's our job to either amend the guidelines or to go back to the House and ask for an amendment to the rule. But we do have to do both as we're doing our work. Thank you.
Seeing nothing further, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Monday night at 5.